dead of night, as people sleep, that's when the spirits creep. As the bell tolls three, dark things take power. We like to call it the Supernatural Hour. Special episode of the Supernatural Hour. I'm Tim.
I'm Raven.
Jeff.
And Chad.
The reason why I say it's special is because we're bringing you an episode 2 weeks in a row. We wanted to do this one last week, and we didn't because Lurch wasn't here, but he's here this week.
I'm here.
Yay.
Physically, but maybe not mentally.
I don't think any of us are really here mentally. So this week, we're bringing you a special Halloween episode, and we're going to be talking about some of the myths and urban legends around Halloween. But before we do that, let's get into some business.
Tim, you sound super sexy with that low voice. I just got to add that little note there.
I wish I had this voice all the time.
On the business, the Indian Hills Horror that has been advertised on the eventsparanormal.com and wisps.org site that was going to be held in Provo has been canceled due to COVID concerns.
Oh.
So unfortunately, that's not going to be there. We did leave links on the eventsparanormal.com site to it, so you can go in and view the video from last year. It's really fun to look at. They're planning to do it next year. They were really bummed out about not doing it, but there was concerns about the COVID and putting all the work into it and then having the police come in and shut them down. Literally last year they had 2,000 people come.
Yeah, and I was planning on going this year too. So that's kind of disappointment, but you know, at least they're putting health and safety first. So that's considerate.
Okay, so one thing we have paranormal, supernatural hour swag, and there's a lot of swag. And when I went on to order some swag because I needed new stuff, they were actually having a sale. It's like 30% off or something. So if you are interested in getting some supernatural hour bling and swag, go to tpublic.com and just search Supernatural Hour.
I might have to pick myself up a shirt. I don't have a shirt.
You can also get their
Supernatural Hour shirts. They're nice.
Yeah.
You can also get there, I believe, through the
Advanced Paranormal.com
merchandise tab.
Yep. Okay. Go to AdvancedParanormal.com, like Don said, under the merchandise tab, and it will take you straight to our merchandise. And there is two drop-downs, I believe. There is merchandise for Advanced Paranormal gear, and there is merchandise for Supernatural Hour.
Groovy.
Yep, so, and there's a sale. At least there was when I looked last. So.
Yeah, and it was a good sale. I mean, it was... Prices were good.
Less money is always good. Having to spend less money. I like that. I'm a fan.
I do too. More money that I have, the happier I am.
Yeah.
So as far as residentials, we haven't done any this last week. None really to report. However, we have two in the works, and one is possibly a poltergeist. So that could be interesting.
You know, we've talked about those before, but I don't know if I've ever actually done a residential that involved a poltergeist.
Me neither. And we've talked about this a little bit before on another podcast, and I wouldn't mind revisiting it after this investigation if it turns out to be. But there's two schools of thought on the poltergeist.
There is.
I was just about to say if you could kind of clarify what would make a poltergeist haunting compared to any other type of haunting. Because, I mean, most hauntings, I think, don't they say that, like, stuff gets moved, things disappear...
Right.
Things get moved around. How is that classified differently from being a poltergeist activity?
This is how this one is going down. The person who told me about it is a neighbor, and she says, hey, I've got a friend whose neighbor is having some activity. Pictures are being thrown off their wall. She says, so it's a poltergeist.
So it's more violent.
A little more violent. Okay. And then, you know, and so the two schools of thought, very, very basically, because this isn't a poltergeist episode, everyone says it's a noisy ghost, one that throws things around.
That's
and
literally, I think, what it translates from. Right. Isn't it like German or Latin or something like that?
Geist does mean ghost. I'm not sure what polter means. I don't know if it's like slang or something.
Right.
I remember mentioning the phrase when I lived in Germany, and people were just kind of like, huh? You know? So I don't think it's a true typical German word. I could be wrong. I'll have to do more research on it, but
I think that's
what it translates to, is basically as a noisy ghost.
Noisy ghost. I think if you polled the average American, or maybe even the average world person, and asked what a poltergeist was, I think they would say noisy ghost. But the other school of thought is that it's actually someone in the home, more often a teenager, and of the teenagers, more often a girl teenager, but it can be young adults that have an ability that they're unaware of. And the best way to explain this is if you've read Harry Potter before he finds out he's a wizard and he does magic when he's under stress.
You're a wizard, Harry.
Well, there's also a story in one of the scary stories to tell in the dark books.
Right.
When we did our episodes a couple of years ago on Poltergeist, we did three, because we talked about Poltergeist and I actually read that story on the show.
Right.
And then we went over the two different types of poltergeist. So we did one episode where we reviewed the Poltergeist movie. And then we went over the other type where we reviewed the Carrie movie.
Right. Yeah. So basically, you know, someone in the home is under stress. They don't realize that they're causing this activity. And the activity usually focuses around whatever's causing their stress. So let's say a young girl is being abused by the uncle that lives in the home. It's going to be his pictures that fly off the wall. It's going to be his photos that are cracked. It's going to be his, you know, keys that fly around the room, sort of a thing. So this will be interesting. We'll see if we can get in there and figure out what it is.
So I do speak German, but like I said, I've never heard the word polter. I don't know if that's something that's really, you know, exists in German. The German word for poltergeist is Klopfgeist, and Klopf means to, like, knock and bang, and Geist means spirit, so I think Klopfgeist is probably their word for that type of activity. But, I mean, I lived in Germany for a year. I've been brushing up on my German a lot lately, and I've never heard the word polter. So if someone speaks German and they do know more about that, I'd love to hear it. But, I mean, I like word etymology, where words originate.
It could even be Latin, if I remember.
It could be.
Be wrong, though.
That could be. I'll have to do some more research on that. But yeah, like I said, I remember mentioning it to my friends, and they're just like, huh? You know, I mean, I'm sure it's a word over there, but it just might be that there's nothing to really translate. I don't know.
So we are bringing to you today what we like to call our Halloween episode, and I think it's going to be super fun.
It is going to be super fun. So yeah, this week we are talking about, like I said earlier, some of the myths and urban legends behind Halloween. So we'll start out with kind of a brief description on what Halloween originally was, and that was the celebration of Samhain. it was basically celebrating like the last day that you could harvest.
Yeah.
And they would light these like giant bonfires, originally called bonfires. Because they would throw the bones in the fire, and I believe they would talk about like the things that they're letting go for the year and getting ready for the harvest or the winter time. A lot of the traditions that we have around today, some of them have been around for about 2,000 years. Some of them are more modern traditions. A lot of the stuff actually came from Ireland, and they brought it over here to the States when they had the, I believe it was the potato famine, and they all started immigrating to the U.S., they started bringing some of their traditions, and one of those being jack-o'-lanterns.
Now, I think this one's super interesting,
so,
but continue.
Originally, what they did was they carved turnips, because they were readily available in Ireland, and when they got here to the States, not so much. That's why they switched to pumpkins, because those were more readily available.
Okay, and I have to say, I think about, because I, you know, if you're like me, every year you carve the pumpkin and you carve it too early, and then by the time Halloween gets here, it's this rotted, mushy,
shriveled
lump on your porch. But I was thinking, they must have carved the turnips differently, because I would probably have a nervous breakdown trying to scoop out a turnip like you would a pumpkin.
The other day I was actually seeing something that someone else did, and it was for making like shrunken heads out of apples. And I wonder if that stems from carving turnips, you know, because turnips aren't very big. They're just a, you know, a smaller root vegetable about the size of like, you know, your fist, or a little bit larger. And these shrunken head apples, you peel them, you soak them in like a water salt mixture for 15 minutes, you carve them, and then you bake them for like 15-16 hours at 200 degree heat and just desiccates, and when it's done, it's all shriveled up like it's been sitting out on the porch for, you know, 3 weeks. And I wonder if that has any ties to the whole turnip thing, but
yeah, I
thought it was interesting.
We should look into that. I know I used to do that in elementary school.
Yeah.
Like we'd carve them up to make them look like witches for Halloween.
Yeah.
But so the tradition of carving jack-o'-lanterns actually came from an old Celtic folklore. There was a drunken farmer named Jack who had tricked the devil.
Jack the Drunk.
Yep, Jack the Drunk. So I guess he had actually tricked the devil, and this resulted in him being turned away from both the gates of heaven and from the gates of hell after he died. Now, having no choice but to wander around the darkness of purgatory, he made a lantern from a turnip and a burning lump of coal that the devil had tossed him from hell.
So it was actually carved out. That's interesting.
Yep.
Wow, that's...
So yeah,
that's
it was carved out, and he put the lump of coal inside.
Very intricate knife work.
That's how he made the lantern. So.
Oh, yeah. I would never have... If someone said, here, carve this turnip, I would have said, oh, heck no.
Maybe turnips were larger back then. I don't know.
It's possible.
Yeah. I don't have that kind of patience.
So... As the story goes, he actually used the lantern to guide his lost soul, and such, the Celts believed that placing jack-o'-lantern outside would help guide lost spirits home when they wandered the streets on Halloween.
Hmm.
Originally, using a hollowed-out turnip with a small candle inside a jack-o'-lantern, frightening card faces also served to scare away evil spirits.
Yeah.
But like I said, when the potato famine of 1846... forced the Irish families to come to North America, they brought that with them, and like I said, they switched to pumpkins because turnips weren't really a thing that was readily available here in the States.
Cool.
Well, and pumpkins are just so much easier to hollow out and carve.
Some of the other things that we have are black cats with Halloween. I know a lot of people, they look at a black cat, they see it walking down the street, especially Halloween. You associate it with bad luck.
I mean, is that's more superstition than like a Halloween thing, isn't it? Like if you see a black cat,
yeah,
it's supposed to be like a bad omen.
Yeah, and as I remember, and I hope I'm not stealing your thunder, but I think the reason black cats were considered evil is because they were either associated with witches or were witches.
Yep. So what they thought they were was. A witch's familiar, which is basically like an animal that kind of links them to the devil, I believe.
Interesting.
Yeah, I think I heard that the witches would avoid detection by turning into a black cat. They'd be like, ooh, someone's coming, we don't want them to see us.
Yeah, see,
They'd go all McGonagall on you. Poof.
Usually elderly, solitary women were accused of witchcraft and their pets were said to be their familiars or their demonic animals that had been given to them by the devil.
Cool.
Another medieval myth that told Satan turned himself into a cat when socializing with witches. But nowadays, black cats, they're not really synonymous with bad luck and mischief everywhere. Actually, in Ireland, Scotland, and England, it's considered good luck for a black cat to cross your path. So that's kind of why black cats are sort of associated with Halloween, because when you think of witches nowadays, anyways, you're thinking more of Halloween time as opposed to when the witch trials were going on. Not just here in the States, but throughout all of Europe as well. I mean, that was just kind of a year-round thing. But then, as time goes on, you know, everything kind of gets lumped into with Halloween.
And, you know, I'm not a cat person, but every black cat that I've come across, they've been super nice, too. I think they just have kind of a bad stigma associated with them that, you know... I mean, I've seen even, like, shelters saying, you know, we have a special rate on any animal that's black, particularly cats. Because I think people just don't want to adopt those kind of animals because it has that bad rap associated with them.
So, we're going to, you know, Halloween, one of the reasons why Halloween is, in my opinion, the best holiday ever is because you can be so creative with it and things have just come from everywhere. We're going to get back into some of the more traditional Halloween stuff. But one that I thought was fun was women back in the Victorian times would actually use Halloween as a way to look into the future. They felt like at the time, kind of the veil between us and the spirit world was extra thin on Halloween. And so the young women in the Victorian times would get really obsessed with finding out who they were going to marry. And in Ireland, for example, if there was a cook that was kind of a matchmaker, she would take a ring and she would bury it in the mashed potatoes on Halloween night. And the thought behind this was whoever found this ring, they would be the next to marry, or they would, you know, they would find true love there at the dinner. In Scotland at the time, fortune tellers would tell young women to name a hazelnut after each of their suitors, and then after they'd named them, they would throw the hazelnuts into the fireplace. And the nut that burned to ashes, rather than popping or exploding, represented the girl's future husband. The nuts that burned away symbolized a love that would not last. They would also peel apples, and, you know, without breaking the, you know, just one big peel, and then they'd lay it down, and whatever letter it looked like, that would be the initial of their spouse.
I did the same thing with, spouse. Like, twisting an apple stem. You know,
right.
You twist it, A, B, C, D, and then when it broke off, you know, whatever letter, it's like, oh, right. That's the girl I'm supposed to marry.
Now, if you peeled the apple...
Didn't work.
No.
Didn't work.
I don't remember.
You didn't marry someone named
Zina? I was, like,
Zina?
In fourth, fifth grade. Yeah. Fourth or fifth grade. Who knows?
Okay, but then it gets exciting, though, because if you're peeling the apple, and if that apple peel breaks, if it breaks in half... You'll marry that person, but he'll end up killing you at some point.
Oh, good times.
Isn't that fun?
Yeah.
So along with this...
So be really careful with that apple peel.
And then one other one is if they went into a room with a mirror, and it was dark, and they lit a candle and looked in the mirror, at some point they would see their future husband standing behind them.
Hmm.
So,
and if they didn't?
If they didn't, then they would be killed by their spouse later.
You know, a lot of these things don't really surprise me because, you know, around that time, the Victorian era, seances were really quite in vogue. I mean, even like Mary Winchester, I'm not sure the exact times that she lived, but she had a seance room devoted towards doing that. And that was really a popular thing to get, you know, people to come over and try to invoke, you know, some sort of spirit that was there and get some... you know, soothsaying, get some sort of like foresight into the future, and you know, that was really a popular thing to do.
That's their entertainment back then. Now we just scroll through TikTok.
I've been
you've been
sense.
To that.
I've been in that room.
You've been in that room.
Yes,
yeah.
And I would love to plan a trip with you and go out there. And
I would
see it.
Love to go there sometime.
The Winchester Mansion is extremely awesome. It is haunted. There are ghosts there, including Sarah Winchester. She is there, from what Brandy said. When I first got there, it was weird because when we were in the gift shop area, I could kind of feel where some of the spirits were, and I didn't feel anything malevolent in that house. But when I actually got into the mansion itself, it was like I was shut off and I couldn't feel anything.
Yeah,
oh, wow.
Brandy was still able to see and hear the spirits, but yeah, as soon as I stepped foot into the actual mansion, I couldn't feel anything.
They did do a live video on Facebook the other night, and I was a little disappointed because it came off as being very cheesy, and the host, the narrator, I didn't really care for him, but you know, they really just jumped room to room to room, and at one point they had like this REM pod with lights on a table, and they kept freaking moving the table around. It's like, just hold the table still, you know, just stay in that room for a few minutes and just, you know, see if we can see something happen. But it's like, you know, 30 seconds, a minute, move on to the next room, have some stupid narration. I was really disappointed.
See, the thing is like, when you're there, they actually don't allow photography, so you're not able to take any pictures while you're in the mansion.
Hmm.
Unfortunately, there's a lot of cool stuff. They do have a room at the end of the tour where they'll let you take some pictures, but as you're walking through, they don't let you take pictures of anything. They also don't let you really touch anything. Like, even the handrails, they don't want you touching them. Like, they'll have stuff roped off and...
So to be able to have cameras and stuff set up there, that's kind of a special privilege.
It is a very special privilege. Just regular people going through and taking the tour, you cannot take pictures.
Yeah.
Like I said, they won't let you touch the railings. They don't want the oils from your fingers getting into the wood. They keep that house as preserved as possible. And it's a really interesting house, just seeing how she had it done. And I wish you could still see it the way it was when she first started building it, because right now it's only like four stories.
Mm-hmm.
Before the earthquake, it was actually seven, and it knocked off the top three layers, and she just never rebuilt those.
And that's part of what she would use the seance room as well for, is that she would go in with blueprints, and she would ask the spirits, you know, like, what do I build next? What should I do next? So that's not surprising, but, you know, I tagged you guys in that video, And I still have yet to do it, but I would love to be able to like watch some sort of live paranormal feed with Brandy there, because I would be really curious to see what's actually there, or if it's just, you know, being hyped up by the hosts and the narrators. Ghost Adventures.
It is a very fascinating house, though.
Yeah.
Like I said, it is haunted. There are several spirits there. Most of them are workers that helped build the house.
Yeah. Some of them died tragically, too, didn't they?
I think so.
During the construction?
I think so. I think there are some that died during the construction. But it was just, I mean, it's hard to not have someone die when you're constantly building for like 30 years.
Yeah.
I think the one time someone stopped, they were fired instantly and no one ever stopped again until she died.
Yeah, right. Hey, that's called job security.
They do a candlelight tour, I believe, every year on Halloween.
Wow, that'd be cool.
That would be so really cool.
That's definitely one that I would love to check out, where they go with like a flashlight or candle. I mean, there's so many superstitions just at that mansion alone that we could get into, but I don't want to on this episode.
Yeah, let's talk about this another time.
But what else do we have, Deanne?
Stick a pin in it.
So as I was kind of, doing some studying, when you study Halloween, and Halloween's not the only thing that takes in a lot, but, there's stuff from the Druids, and there's stuff from the Native Americans, and there's stuff from, just all different religions. And one of the things is when there's a distinctly American, as in the Native Americans, indigenous peoples, they would have these celebrations called play parties, and they were public events, to celebrate the harvest, like we talked about earlier, which kind of makes me think, Native Americans, that makes me think of Halloween. But the neighbors would get together, they'd eat, they would share stories of the dead, tell each other's fortunes, they would dance and sing.
That's my kind of shindig.
Right, and even you go back a little further, or I guess you go jump into the future from, the Native Americans going into colonial Halloween festivities. They also did a lot of ghost-telling stories, mischief-making, which might be partly where trick-or-treats would come. They'd go around and play pranks on each other and blame it on ghosts.
I have a whole bunch of that, and we can talk on about the trick-or-treating and mischief night.
Oh, yeah. We'll go there here in just a second. But, just a lot of, it looks like in the Americas, and with all the immigrants bringing all their traditions from their countries, just kind of really helped spark Halloween and make it kind of global. So, tell us, Tim.
So, originally, what trick-or-treating was, in old times, it was believed that during Samhain, the veil between our world and the spirit world.
Don't you mean Samhain?
Samhain.
Yeah.
Yeah. Samhain.
Samhain. Okay.
None of us are probably saying it right.
That's okay.
Like Deanne mentioned earlier, it's when the veil between our world and the spirit world is thinnest. And then, they believe that that's when ghosts of the deceased could mingle and roam around with the living. Now, as the superstition was that visiting ghosts could disguise themselves in human form, such as a beggar, and knock on your door and ask for money or food. Now, if you turn them away empty-handed, you risk receiving the wrath of the spirit and being cursed or haunted. Another Celtic myth was that dressing up as a ghoul would fool the evil spirits into thinking that you were one of them, so they wouldn't try to take your soul. Then the U.S. trick-or-treating became a customary tradition in the late 50s, after it was brought over the Irish immigrants in the early 1900s. But before even that, they didn't really do a whole lot of trick-or-treating. They did. They had something that they called Mischief Night. And basically, kids would go around and they would...
Do mischief?
They would do mischief.
That makes sense. Since it's called Mischief Night and everything. I think this Halloween's going to be especially cool because, it sucks that we're in the middle of a global pandemic, but... it happens to fall on a Saturday, and it's a blue moon,
I think,
or
so.
A blood moon. I can't remember. I know blue moon is when you have two full moons in the same month.
Yeah, it's the second full moon.
Yeah, but to have it land on Halloween like this, I think this is like the first time in 70 years. I don't know. I'm just pulling
like
a number out of the air.
It's like the perfect Halloween aside from a pandemic.
Well, this year was also like the perfect Cinco de Mayo. It landed on a Taco Tuesday, and all these things, but of course
Daddy,
we have
you, COVID.
Stupid freaking pandemic ruins it for everyone. Come on.
Well, you know, if people don't, it's, I'm kind of glad people don't still practice Mischief Night, because that would just ruin things even more. But basically what Halloween was then was neighborhood kids would, they would play pranks on each other. And it would be anything from egging and toilet papering houses to smashing jack-o'-lanterns. It was also called Devil's Night.
I've done that.
I think
I was just going to say, has anybody here done tricks on Halloween people?
As soon as it would turn midnight after Halloween, you know, on November 1st, I remember going out with friends, driving around neighborhoods and taking baseball bats to jack-o'-lanterns. You know, I didn't smash any mailbox at least, so there's always a, you know, silver lining to every cloud, right?
Well, see,
it was only pumpkins.
Back then,
you clean it up.
The Celts would actually, you know, with the Samhain, they would celebrate with bonfires, games, and pranks. By the 1920s and 30s, however, that stuff became more rowdy, and it started leading into acts of vandalism, and it was possibly due to the tension caused by the Great Depression. It was so bad, the vandalism and just everything that was going on, to try to kind of get rid of that. That's when they started handing out candy to bring back the whole trick-or-treating thing and offering stuff to the spirits.
To appease the wrath. So, Tim, you were telling us that there was something about owls. I've been patiently waiting to hear your research on owls.
I mean, owls had something to do with Halloween as well.
I like owls. Owls are one of my favorite animals.
I kind of imagine them as being messengers. I mean, you look at like Harry Potter, like maybe there's some sort of omen messenger.
Did you ever play Zelda Ocarina of Time?
Yeah,
there's an owl there too that would give messages.
So yeah, that's totally the opposite of what they actually believed back then. So because of the feathers on their heads, that made them look like little horned devils. And some of the Greek and Roman superstitions claimed that witches could actually turn into owls and suck the blood of babies. Others said the owls... Oh, I guess this you're right on this one. This
getting
is
really morbid.
Well,
yeah.
See, then it goes back to what you were just saying. Owls were messengers for sorcerers. And if you heard a hoot of an owl, that meant a witch is coming.
Ooh, spooky. Kind of cool spooky, but spooky nonetheless. So Halloween, you know, we've kind of been talking about things in the past, and we may revisit some stuff in the past, but as I was doing research for this, there's some modern stuff that's kind of interesting and sad. There are several different stories, two or three, you know, around the country where people have decided to take their life, and they've hung themselves, you know, in public, and... I don't even know how to say this without sounding horrible, but you know, they would do it in public places right around Halloween, and people thought it was Halloween decorations.
Yeah, I've heard about stuff like that.
And they'd be there for the longest time until they finally realized, you know, that someone was missing and put two and two together. And
hey,
people
it's
realized,
almost Thanksgiving. They were going to take down that.
Right, you know, and so then it was like, oh, you know. So that's sad. You hear stories all the time of people that will pitch, and these are probably more urban legends, you know, the rest of these. But hitchhikers, you know, will get picked up and someone will drop them off near a cemetery and they turn around to, you know, wave and they're gone. You know, there's a ton of those types of stories. There's one where a college heard that there was going to be a massacre on Halloween. But it's never actually happened, and it never really said what college. And there, to this day, and I think this was like back in the 60s or 70s, to this day, there are still some colleges that will say, be careful on Halloween, because we don't know if this is actually going to happen. So those are, you know, there's even modern traditions-ish urban legends that go on.
There's still some other ones that we can get into. What I have next up is bats with Halloween. I know people see pictures or like you get Halloween decorations, you see bats and stuff like that.
I've got bats in my front room.
Part of the reason that is another thing that people believed were familiars for witches. It was also said that seeing a bat on Halloween was considered to be an ominous sign. One of the myths was that if a bat was spotted flying around your house three times, it meant that someone in the house was going to die soon. Another myth was that if the bat actually flew into your house on Halloween, it was a sign that your house was haunted and that the ghost had actually let the bat into your house.
All right.
Another thing with bats, though, like with the Samhain celebration with the giant bonfires, it would attract a lot of insects. And the insects would attract the bats.
Yeah.
So let me tell you a bat story. When I was 8, my parents built a house, and we moved into this house. And I was dead asleep in my bed, and we had a fireplace. And apparently a bat flew in under the eaves, down the chimney, and was flying around the house. And my parents are trying to get the bat out of the house, and they're chasing it around with a broom. Apparently they turned the light on. We're running around my room for about 10 minutes, and I am oblivious. I wake up in the morning and my mom said, "Do you remember us coming in your room running around?" I was like, "Nope." So apparently my house is haunted because parents' house.
We've been to your house. But your parents says it is haunted. They have so three ghosts. It's possible that they let the bat in.
They put chicken wire up at the top of the under the eaves so they don't get bats in their house anymore.
Well, that's good.
Cool.
Because that's the last thing I'd want is a bat flying around my house.
Right?
Yeah. Bats have rabies. I have no idea. Yeah,
before I had children, I was a pretty sound sleeper, though.
Spiders, another animal associated with Halloween.
These are the creepiest. I hate spiders.
I do not like spiders at all, but I did buy a dead tarantula in a glass case. And it's displayed proudly on Brandy's TV stand.
That's cool.
Not in my house.
I had a friend send me a picture of I don't even know where they were, but someone's Halloween decor was a gigantic spider on top of their house. Kind of an animatronic that would creep down on, and they said, "Is that too much?" I'm like, "Oh yeah, that is too much. That is so too much."
Kids will just walk by it this year. Nope. They'll have all the candy left over.
So spiders, another thing that was believed to be kind of like a familiar of a witch, is another reason why this is kind of associated with Halloween. It's one of the superstitions was that if a spider falls onto a candlelit lamp and is consumed by the flame.
Yay!
Burn it.
It's a good night.
So if a spider fell on your lamp and burned, that meant a witch was nearby.
Oh, yay.
And if you spot a spider on Halloween, it means that the spirit of a deceased loved one is watching over you. So it could be a good thing. If you see a spider on Halloween, that means that you have a family member that's passed is there watching over you. So spiders aren't necessarily as bad.
I still don't want them in my house.
I've become kind of Buddhist, I guess, with spiders because my wife freaks out and I'm like, you know, the spider killer. But it's like, you know, lately I'll take like a glass and I'll trap them on the wall and then slide a paper underneath it and walk outside and just catch and release. You know, I've heard spiders are actually kind of good for your ecosystem inside your house, you know, eating the other bugs. So
yeah, if you're trying to grow a garden like Deanna is, the spiders are going to kill the insects.
Yeah, the mites.
Right. Yeah, back to our gardening. So I have made a pact with the spiders in this area. As long as they stay outside and are not poisonous, they can live. The poisonous ones have to die every September. They die.
Yeah, I actually saw a black widow in our garage probably 2 or 3 months ago, and I know they're you know, fairly common in this area, but that's the first time I've ever seen a black widow. And at first I just thought it was just a normal spider, and then as it started to move around,
you're like, no.
You could see the red hourglass shape on its abdomen, and I was like, oh crap, that's one I want to get rid of.
We had my bug sprayer come last year, I think it was last year, and he sprayed, and I went outside later, and the ones that I found 11 black widows.
Wow.
You don't have him come last year. You had him come last year, and then...
Oh, he comes twice a year. He comes in April and September.
Bi-monthly.
Anyway, if spiders want to live and they're unpoisonous, they have to stay outside. If you're a black widow, you're gone.
What if the black widow is seen on Halloween? That could be your aunt.
Well, she should have known the pact and not come.
But Krista's awesome.
She wouldn't come as a black widow.
You don't know.
She would come as a happy, sparkly butterfly.
Wolf spider. So now that I've mentioned all of these things that deal with witches, so I'll get into witches and why they're part of Halloween. And that this also originates back to pagan times. with a pagan goddess actually known as the Crone, who was honored during Samhain. And right as I did that, my page refreshed it and moved it. The Crone was the honored during this time, and she was also known as the Old One and the Earth Mother, and she symbolized wisdom, change, and the turning of the seasons. Now, when you think about witches, you see the old, like, green-faced, cackling witch.
Cauldron, making potions, and, creepy...
Cauldrons are actually next on my list. And they actually believe that after death, all souls went into the Crone's cauldron, which symbolized the Earth's mother's womb. There, the souls would wait reincarnation as the goddess's stirring allowed for new souls to enter the cauldron and old souls to be reborn. That image of the cauldron of life has now been replaced with steaming, bubbling, ominous brew. So it's kind of weird to see how, like, some of this stuff back in old, like, pagan times were actually good things, mm-hmm. and just over the years they've morphed into these terrible, evil things.
Spooky. Creepy.
Broomsticks.
Well, and part of that goes with religion and propaganda of trying to oust old religions and old beliefs with new religions and beliefs by making them less tenable.
Yep.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, when you mix in other religions and then when you get into more modern times, commercialism.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting to see how much more commercialized Halloween has gotten just the last 5 to 10-ish years. I remember when I was little, you'd go to the, the nickel and dime store and your costume was literally a plastic mask.
Yeah.
And a little plastic drape.
Yeah, it was like a plastic apron, mm-hmm. and you'd sweat underneath those things, and you couldn't breathe in the mask because there's like two tiny pinholes for nostrils. And
but you thought you were so cool
because,
you were a little Bo Peep. And then I remember putting up Halloween decorations, which consisted of probably 5 or 6 different cardboard, just kind of cutouts, just kind of like that stock
paper, yeah.
like a poster board thickness. And we had a couple witches and a couple pumpkins, and we'd hang them up. And I mean, right now my front yard looks like you need a ticket to get to the front door.
You've got it really nicely decorated. I like the way that it looks.
Thank you. My favorite. I bought these candles. They're LED candles, mm-hmm. and they flicker.
That's cool.
And we hung them up with.
Yeah, I saw that up
That's
front.
My
so it looks like
thing.
The Great Hall in Hogwarts with the floating candles.
The floating candles and mm-hmm. floating witch's hats. That's my favorite part.
We did that at one of the places that I worked around Halloween, as we'd kind of break the floor that we worked on into different sections. And one year, one of the sections was kind of a Harry Potter theme, and they had a bunch of floating candles, and I thought that was kind of cool.
I actually had to drop my daughter off somewhere yesterday, and the people there, like townhomes, and they're 3 stories, and each story has a wrought iron balcony,
mm-hmm.
and one family had gotten skeletons, and it's kind of a cool pirate theme, and these skeletons are climbing up all the balconies and climbing down all the balconies and looking. It's really cool.
That sounds fun.
Did you know Halloween is actually the second most profitable holiday of the year?
I don't know.
By Christmas.
I believe that.
I don't doubt that at all.
Yeah, it's a lot to do with the expensiveness of costumes nowadays, and then candy. I mean, because people are dropping like hundreds of dollars to buy a Halloween costume.
Well, I remember even 5-10 years ago, I took a class, and it was about economics, and each week we had to bring in some sort of news article. And I remember one week I was talking about the rise in the value of chocolate. How it's becoming more and more scarce, and so over the next few years, the value of chocolate would slowly increase. And I mean, I think we're even seeing that now. It's like, you could buy a huge bag of chocolate candy for like $1 or $2. Now it's like you're dropping $15 on little fun size Snickers and Milky Ways, and it's getting ridiculous. But yeah.
Well, and then the decor too. I think people are getting so into decor. If I had just like unlimited funds, I could easily go drop $2,000 or $3,000 today.
So easily, yeah. There's so much stuff I'd love to buy, but yeah. My wallet says
like to,
no.
You like to eat and have a roof over your head,
I enjoy eating things other than ramen. And
you need to have a place that you can decorate.
I like having Wi-Fi.
Wi-Fi is overrated.
Yeah, I don't know.
I wouldn't be able to go through my list if we didn't have Wi-Fi down here. So another thing associated with Halloween is the witch's broomsticks. And part of that was the old elderly women, the introverted women, were often accused of witchcraft. And they were poor and couldn't afford horses, so they navigated through the woods on foot with the help of walking sticks, which were sometimes substituted by brooms. Now, the folklore tells us that during nighttime ceremonies, witches rubbed a flying potion on their bodies, closed their eyes, and felt as though they were flying. The hallucinogenic ointment, which caused numbness, rapid heartbeat, and confusion, gave them the illusion that they were soaring through the sky.
I recently watched the movie The Witch, and it takes place in like colonial Massachusetts. You know what we're talking about, right?
I know. I've seen that once, and I don't know if I'll ever watch it again.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Was it scary or stupid?
It was a slow burn.
It was a slow burn. It was realistic.
But it was very realistic about how people were accused of practicing witchcraft. And, one of the protagonists, she's a little 14-year-old girl, and she's chastised and shunned by her family after all these deaths occur. But like one of the final scenes is she comes upon a coven of witches that are dancing naked around a bonfire, and she joins them. She takes off her clothes, and like the final image is she's got her eyes closed and she's floating up into the trees.
And they're actually chanting in Latin.
Yeah.
Oh, that would be creepy.
So, yeah.
This is the same people that I believe did Hereditary and Midsommar.
Oh, okay.
If you've seen either one of those movies, it's
kind of the same feel. Same.
Very realistic.
I liked Midsommar.
Very somber.
I thought Midsommar was
good. I need to find that one.
Oh, man. It's on Netflix.
I'll have to watch it.
Yeah, it's really good.
So one more of the older traditions. I do have a couple others, but I just want to go into the colors of Halloween, which are black and orange.
And purple.
And they stem from pagan celebrations of the autumn and the harvest, with orange symbolizing the colors of the crops and the turning leaves, while black marks the death of summer and the changing season. Now, over time, green, purple, and yellow have also been introduced as colors of Halloween.
So I don't know if this is a thing everywhere. I saw it on the internet that if you were willing to have trick-or-treaters come to your house this year because of COVID, you took a pumpkin and spray-painted it purple and put it in your front yard. I don't think it's really caught on, but I thought, that's a cute idea. I like purple. So I got two pumpkins, spray-painted them purple. One of them, I don't know if pumpkins need to breathe, but one of them turned into absolute goo. It was like a spray paint, like a four-layer spray paint ball of goo, and I barely got it in the garbage can without experiencing whatever horror might have been inside that goo.
Halloween, especially this year, it's free candy day. You come to my door, free candy. You're an adult, free candy. Don't have a costume, free candy. Everyone gets free candy this year.
You can always tell who the dentists are, though.
Right?
Because you're not getting candy, you're getting free toothbrushes.
Yeah. or little boxes of raisins.
We had a pediatric
apple.
We had a pediatric dentist several years ago that would actually pay kids for their candy. He paid them he paid them $1 a pound.
Wow.
If you took your candy in, weigh it, he'd pay you cash.
Meanwhile, my dentist encouraged me to eat bags of caramels and says, I'll see you next month.
That's pretty cheap for candy. If I go to the candy store, I'm paying $16 for a pound of candy.
You better
up his game here.
I remember going to the dentist as a kid, and they had lollipops on the way out, and they'd give you a lollipop, and it's like right after cleaning. And I guess that's,
keep
job security. Hey, we'll see you again soon. Enjoy that lollipop, little kid.
We have a street here locally, just down kind of behind the Walmart, where they have booths set up outside. Before COVID, every Halloween, and they'll pass out cider and hot dogs and popcorn and chili, and you got to go earlier because when they're out, they're out.
I do love cider, fresh pressed cider in fall. It's just a great thing. Warm, cold. There's a place.
Would that be pumpkin spice cider?
No, I'm not a fan of pumpkin spice at all. But there's a place about, I don't know, 45 minutes south of here, the Red Barn. Mm-hmm. And they have fresh pressed cider that's just amazing. And fortunately, some of the local supermarkets have started carrying it, the Red Barn cider. And I think it's only at certain supermarkets, but it's worth spending a few extra dollars for because it is just it's like drinking candy. It is so good.
Yeah. So a little background there. Where this Red Barn is in the area where I was born and raised, and there's apple orchards down there. So. It is literally picked fresh off the tree, fresh, the good apples, not those nasty ones you get in the store.
You can taste the freshness. It is unbelievable.
These are the good, original, not over-processed apples.
Yeah, last year, the place that I was working at, the manager, we had a meeting with all the other supervisors, and she brought in, like, 2 gallons of the red barn cider and a bunch of,
it's like crack.
Pumpkin spice donuts, but it was delightful. It was tantalizing, mesmerizing, and fantasizing.
Lurch endorses the Red Barn cider.
I give Red Barn cider 2 thumbs up. Check it out. Ask your local retailers for them to carry it. Unless you live in Utah, then you're just
they've got
shit
good
out
ice
of
cream.
Luck.
They've got good ice cream, too, in the summer.
I haven't had the ice cream.
It's tasty.
You know, apples are actually also a part of Halloween.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, do tell.
Well, candy apples and bobbing for apples.
Bobbing for apples. So what's the bobbing for apples come from?
Well, in ancient times, it was viewed as a sacred fruit.
A sacred feud?
A feud.
Yeah.
Sacred feud.
I'm taking my anger out on this apple.
Okay, so we changed our podcasting time to 10 o'clock in the morning from the afternoon, and it seems like it takes a little longer for your tongues to wake up.
Yeah.
Well, I think Deanne already talked about the predicting in the future, but when the bobbing for apples comes in, as the game was used for fortune telling on Halloween night, it was believed that the first person to pluck an apple from the water-filled bucket without using their hands would be the first one to marry. If the bobber lucked out and caught an apple on the first try, it meant that they would experience true love, with those who got an apple after many tries would be fickle in their romantic endeavors.
Boy, those colonial Victorians were really hung up on getting married, getting hitched, weren't they?
That's all the girls
let's
did.
Let's play that dating was... games. Come on. Spin the bottle. I'm sure that has Halloween ties.
Probably. Well, another thing with apple is if a girl put it under her pillow at night.
Yeah.
She would dream about her future husband.
Of course. I should have
known a more common or a more modern myth with apples is the razor blades. There's a lot of
razor blades and needles inside.
Yeah, they always tell you to inspect your candy for like, needle holes.
You could go take it to the hospital and get an x-rayed.
And always search your kid's candy bag. Last year, I think I found a... Nickelback CD, so it's very dangerous.
I always search them. I got to confiscate those Almond Joys.
Oh man!
It's
dad tax.
I was gonna say I put a mom tax.
Yeah,
on candy,
yeah.
So, and it's Reese's peanut butter cups from everybody except one, and he hates Almond Joys, and that's number 2 on the favorite list.
I usually wait until the kids are in bed, and I kind of go through their stash at night. But yeah, I take a good fair portion, but
some of the younger
it's
kids,
a tradition, the gift that keeps on giving.
They'll come up and they'll give me a dum-dum. I'm like, no, that is not mom tax.
No.
What you really should be looking for in your kids' candy is the marijuana edibles and the LSD-laced tattoos.
Because, they're going to pass those out for free every year.
But this is something that pops up every year.
It does.
They actually tell people to be on the lookout for it. The funny thing is I don't think that there has ever been a recorded incident of either one of these happening, but it is another one of those.
It's an urban myth.
People that enjoy their substances like enjoying their substances.
Exactly.
And they're expensive.
They're not going to give them out to little kids.
What's funny
that's
is,
for sure.
As I was watching some of these videos that mention these two things, the person I was watching them with was just like, you'd be surprised. I'm sitting there thinking, I know how much it costs for certain products.
Yeah.
I would be very surprised if someone was actually handing out edibles and LSD-laced tattoos during Halloween, because that stuff is expensive.
It is.
I mean, unless you're like super high when you're handing out Halloween stuff, like it's not, I don't know anyone that's
actually. I ran out of fruit snacks, bro. Here, why don't you take
have
one
a brownie.
Of these. So, yeah.
this just sounds like a plot of some police movie. You know, the guy gets high, passes out the stash, and then the dealer comes and tries to kill him. And I was like, dude, I passed it out for Halloween.
Did you just write a script in
yeah.
like 30 seconds?
I did. There you go.
I'm incorporating that into my screenplay now.
Awesome.
Thank you.
Copyrighted. Put trademark on that right now. But yeah, those are actual Halloween like myths and legends.
That's there. Really interesting. Yeah,
I
this
love
is
Halloween.
Some good stuff.
It is absolutely my favorite Halloween or my favorite holiday, because it's so, you can be so creative with
it's
it.
It's a fun holiday. I definitely get excited for Halloween. I mean, it has a special place in my heart next to Christmas, but Halloween, you know, it's just, there's something about scary stuff. You know, I love haunted attractions. I love going to, you know, haunted locations during Halloween time. And My oldest son, he's 11. I'm trying to get him to go, but you know, he's still a little bit too young. But it's like watching a scary movie. You go into a theater, you're in a safe place, you get the sock scared off you, you come out laughing, and you know, you had a heart racing experience. Same thing with like going to a haunted location. You got people that jump out of the shadows, and you know, I'm laughing giddy out of nervousness and fear, but also just sheer joy. And you know, they don't touch you, they don't do anything, but they do everything they can to scare you. And it's you know, you feel safe as you're walking through, but you transcend that experience into something that's it's great. I mean, if you haven't been to a haunted location during Halloween time, go and do it. It's get past your fears. It's you'll be laughing by the time you leave.
Well, if you're looking for a good haunted house, here's a quick list of the top 5 haunted houses here in Utah, anyways, according to castleofchaos.com. Number 5.
I'm guessing Castle of Chaos, number 1.
Well, let's wait and find
okay.
out.
Okay, drum roll.
So starting at number 5 real quick is the Dead City Haunted House. This is normally in Murray, Utah, I believe. Number 4, and I've actually been to this one quite a bit when I was younger, and I do remember it being a good haunted house. That's Nightmare on 13th.
Nightmare on 13th is good.
Number 3, we've investigated here, but I've never actually been to the haunted attraction, is Fear Factory.
I was going
to
say, I went there once. I had a passes, but it was on a blackout day, so there were hardly any volunteers in the actual attraction, and they had all the lights turned off. So it was still a fun experience, though.
So the nice thing about, at least I know about 3, 2, and 1 are actually, besides being haunted attractions, are actually haunted.
Okay, I'm curious to see if one of my favorite locations is on that list.
So number 2.
Okay.
We've all investigated before, and that is Asylum 49.
Asylum 49.
That one's fabulous.
That one is dark, and there's a lot of activity there. And they've recently bought out the entire building. Half of it used to be a working retirement home, and it was baffling to me that people were still dropping off their parents there. You know, the half of the building is this haunted attraction year round, and the other half you actually have these people that are being taken care of by nurses and doctors, and they're left there to, you know.
So 2 years ago for my birthday, I actually took you to Asylum 49.
We went there together.
We got to investigate.
Yeah, that was a really cool experience.
You did the other side?
I've done the other side about 3 times now.
Yeah, that was fun.
The first time I did it, though, was with Lurch, and it was a very, very interesting experience.
It was.
Well, a lot of activity that night.
Back room with the operating table, there was a lot of dark activity back there.
There was.
That.
I remember you standing with your back to the one hallway because there was a dark entity down
that
way.
And I sensed it.
I remember seeing, we had the Ghost Meter Pro on the floor in between us, and I remember seeing a spirit bend down to touch it, and as soon as I saw that, it lit up.
Wow. So, that's awesome. Yeah.
And then I remember her, I don't know if you remember this, she was crouching down behind me, like holding onto my shirt because she was afraid of the entity that was on the inside of you.
Yeah.
I get the chills just.
I've got goose pimples on my arm. And
it was such a neat and kind of creepy experience. There was a lot of other stuff that happened that night, but the Silent 49. Not is a full contact. I don't know if they're doing that this year with the COVID, but on normal years you sign a waiver and it's full contact.
Really?
I've seen videos where they actually, like, as you're waiting in line to go into the haunted house. They'll come and grab people and they'll separate you from your group and they'll lock you in a room by yourself.
For hours.
And I would love, love, love to go with me and you and see if they attempt to do anything to either one of us.
I'm not so sure about the full contact being held. I mean, I would... Oh, gosh. But not knowing when I'm going to get released.
We're not small guys, though, so...
I know. We could fight. We could fight back.
Peter Brady's
back. Yeah, come on. Come on, Peter. Tell us more.
I think it would be a struggle. They would have to find some really big dudes.
Seriously. I can imagine four or five people struggling.
And I'm sure they would. Sure they would send like four or five guys out.
Like, the big ones.
That one.
Yeah. Like, ooh, get that one.
And I probably wouldn't mind because I'd like sneak into K2 or something and try to investigate in the dark. So you need to lock me in a room by myself. I'll get my pendulum out. Does anyone here want to talk to me?
So Asylum 49 is number 2 on the list. So what's number one? Presented by Castle of Chaos.
Drum roll, please.
Number one location is...
Castle of Chaos.
Wow.
And the surprise. The reason why they say that they're number one is they're also very interactive. I've been to Castle of Chaos, and I actually love it. Of course, the one time I went, I was with two drunk girls, and we almost got kicked out. I think actually one of them got kicked out and snuck back in. But it's not you just walking through, because Haunted House is like tell a story. Mm-hmm. You're walking through and it's a lot of it's jump scares, but Castle of Chaos actually tells a story.
Cool.
Like they have someone guide you through and they have a story that they go through. And I remember one of the things I did when I went a long time ago is they had a room where they did like a little mini seance and like a demon popped out or whatever, but
wow.
They actually have a guide going through with you. And I don't know if that's, I believe that's still how it is, but they have someone like legit telling you a story. And they, this is actually a haunted house that was put together by a bunch of LARPers. If you don't know, it's live action role playing. Yeah. So it's a bunch of like legitimate actors that have put this together, and they tell a fascinating story when you're going through this haunted house. So I can see why they would be ranked number one. And it's not just like Castle Chaos. I've seen in like national polls that people have done, and a lot of the top haunted houses are actually here in Utah, and Castle Chaos is usually on the top of those lists.
Now, one that didn't make the list that's one of my personal favorites is the Haunted Forest in American Fork. I've been there probably 3 or 4 times. I haven't been there the last few years because I want the memories to kind of fade a little bit so it'll feel fresh. But they do change it up from year to year. They add a little bit of variation so it's not the same thing every year. But you're walking through a literal forest. They have a pathway and it's really well made. It took me probably about an hour to go through with my wife, and I have a blast every single time I go there. So that's worth checking out. That's south of Salt Lake in Utah County.
Another one that's really good that Raven and I and the kids went to, this was last year or the year before, was Evermore.
It's been 2 years. Oh, Evermore?
Yeah, when we went to Evermore.
That was last year.
And I haven't been there yet. It's good?
It's a real experience. It's immersive. There's a story.
Yeah. It's not a haunted house per se, but they decorated up... So they decorate up Halloween.
Festive, go through.
And it's like, you know, there's characters dressed up.
And they're in story.
And they're in story mode.
You
can tell that they're probably talking about cheeseburgers or what they did at school. But as soon as you get close to them, they're like, oh, and forsooth, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
You know, and you have to kind of, there's a story going on and you got to figure it out. When we were there, it was a plague. Yeah, go figure. And we had there was one person that, you know, was the plague carrier, and they every time you'd walk past someone, they'd say something about, you know, a tartan scarf, and so you're looking. But they did actually have, there's different buildings you can go into there, and they actually had one that was like a crypt that it was kind of like a haunted house on a smaller scale. And then
it's immersive role playing.
Right.
It is an immersive role playing.
And then they said at a certain time, it was pretty low key for kids, but then at a certain time, it got scarier for adults. And there was a key word that they would put out. I don't remember what it was.
A safe word.
Well, just
watermelon.
Rutabaga.
Watermelon.
Yeah. Well, it was like Subway. It was like the anti-safe word. It's like, okay, this is happening. So if you've got little kids, you want to have sleep for the next 5 years, probably send the kids out. And we had kids, so we left. But
now, is Evermore open year round, or is that just seasonal?
It's open year round.
That's what I thought. I wanted to check it out. My wife has asked me if I wanted to go, so I wasn't sure.
So it's kind of medievalish, and if you go dressed up, it's more fun.
Nice.
So you can go dressed up any time of the year.
Oh, that's cool.
I would love to go dressed up in my Star Trek outfit. it and pretend like, you know,
you're a time traveler.
We're time travelers, yeah. And, you know, the Prime Directive, and, oh no, they can see us. You know, so.
We should go together as a group sometime. I think that'd be fun.
That would be fun.
And it is. It's not really expensive. I mean, It's not cheap, but it's not.
It's not an arm and a leg.
It was like $20 to get in, or $25.
Dude, that's not bad.
Yeah, we took the kids.
I think Haunted Forest is like $40 per person, so that's less than going through the Haunted Forest.
And I do have two Star Trek costumes.
What we should do as a group is the Grim Ghost Tours Christmas Tour.
Ooh, that'd be fun.
I've done it once before. Okay. I was going to do it, I believe, last year, but I got sick and couldn't go. You don't think of ghost stories when you think of Christmas, but that's kind of where ghost stories were.
Yeah,
originally. It was a Christmas thing.
Christmas Carol. I mean, that's a classic ghost story that I read every year, and it's just, you know, short little, you know, novella. It's like what, 100 pages, if that, 80 pages, and it's just great read. It's a ghost story.
Yeah, I do want to tell you about the creepiest haunted house that I've ever been to, though. And that was the old Utah State Mental Hospital.
They don't do that one anymore, do they?
They haven't done it for years. But when I was, this would be in the mid-70s, they'd actually have the inmates at the hospital do the haunted house. You know, they were certified. You know, they were certified in more ways than one. But they were actually putting this on, and they'd make money, and it was huge.
Wow.
If you go there, there's literally an old stone castle and an amphitheater up on the back part of the hill, and it is fabulous. They've done movies, they've done other things there, but it looks medieval, and it's a really neat place. But yeah, I punched one guy out because he's so bad.
Where is this? I didn't know.
Center Street in Provo, and go all the way to the end, out down by Seven Peaks.
Oh. Yeah.
And when you crash into the mountain, you're there.
You're there.
Okay.
And you can see the castle, and it's literally an old rock castle that was built during the PPP, the Conservation Corps, back in the 1930s.
Okay.
And it's phenomenal. I've actually been to a wedding reception there at one point in time. Okay. So it is accessible, but it's a really neat venue.
I used to work on Center Street in Provo, but it was only two blocks east of State Street, of the main street.
If you go all the way to the mountain, it's up on the, you know, when I say up on the mountain, it's on the foothill, just at the base of the
mountain. I never went that far east.
See,
so I'll have to
there's
check
one that used to be around that I really miss. It's part of Chinatown now, but Rocky Point Haunted House.
Oh, that was awesome.
Salt Lake has a Chinatown?
Yeah.
Really?
Yep.
I did not
know
that.
It's like 33rd South and like State Street.
Oh, yeah.
It used to be
David's
Rocky
Kitchen. Point.
That's right. Yeah, David's Kitchen and
33rd South, State Street.
The temple entrance thing right next to Southern Exposure.
Yeah. Rocky Point.
The strip clubs. That's how I know it. No,
it used to be done by people that actually worked in Hollywood. I believe Greg Nicotero, if I remember correctly.
Nice.
Like one of the guys that does Walking Dead used to be a part of that haunted house.
Wasn't that up in Ogden originally?
I don't know.
Yeah, I've been there when it was up in Ogden, and it was awesome.
It was around for like 20 plus years. It was an amazing haunted house. I mean, they had actual like wax figures as you were waiting in line of like the different slashers and whatnot. But I think we're going to kind of skip some of the other segments that we normally save for the end of the show because we have run a little bit long. We appreciate each and every one of you for listening to our show. We hope that you all have a happy and safe Halloween.
Yes. Happy Halloween.
You've been listening to the Supernatural Hour at advancedparanormal.com. The Supernatural Hour is part of the Radio Ronin Network, found at radioronin.com.